Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint. This is Bo Spearham with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before I go on any further, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners on this land we are broadcasting from and also to. So I would like to pay my respects to our elders and also our elders of more recent arrival. And a big shout out to everybody around the continent that is taking our program via the National Indigenous Radio Service NIRS or tuning in via our app 98.9 FM for the best country, which you can download for free from any app stores. Also, if you're listening via our website, 989fm.com.au, those platforms beaming us into your communities, so it's great to have your company. Joining me on the program this morning is a friend of mine, Brother Ronnie, from West Papua. I had Brother Ronnie on the program a few months ago to give us, to let some of the listeners know that I guess might be not too informed about the situation in West Papua or the history, the contemporary history of West Papua. And I guess it just depends who's on your Facebook sometimes when you see certain articles being shared around. For the last few days, there has been an internet block into West Papua and to seeing articles or sort of photos and getting proper updates from West Papua to see what's happening in that part of the world at the moment. It is one of our closest countries. It's about 2 hours from Australia. That's West Papua is closer than what New Zealand is. West Papua is the western side of is on the west side of that island where where Papua New Guinea is, which is located on the east side, and then there's a line that sort of splits it. One side is known as West Papua today and the other is Papua New Guinea. I'll bring my guest into the program now. How you going, Brother Ronnie?
Good morning, my brother Bob. I'm good. How are you?
Good, thank you. And thanks for coming on the program this morning. And also, it must be some hard times for yourself and I guess the West Papuan community that are living outside of home, outside of your country. Just a big thank you. And, we send our love, to the West Papuan community of Australia. Just for our listeners, brother, could you tell us a bit about yourself, where you're from?
Yes, firstly, thank you very much for love and support and to be able to just share again the story of West Papua in the last few days or basically this month. As myself, as you've already introduced, Ronnie Kareni, from West Papua, grew up in Papua New Guinea, but currently based here in Australia and been living for a while now, at least in 20 years. So it has been a great opportunity being here and to share story and as well as experience of the indigenous people of West Papua as well as the indigenous people here and to really strengthen each other. And so I'm glad I've been over the years been having a yarn with you, brother, as well as meeting a lot of amazing staunch elders out there as well as upcoming leaders. And so it has also strengthened me as a person, but as well as the West Papuan community here in Australia to join hands together in the fight that we all fight against the system that has suppressed and silenced the voice of all people.
Definitely, my brother. And it's been a bit of a journey, I guess, the last few years for yourself, telling the story of what's currently happening in West Papua. And I'm sure just like many other West Papuans do in Australia and other parts of the world. Before we have a chat about what's currently going on within West Papua at the moment, could you let us know or just a brief history of the occupation of West Papua for our listeners, just to sort of give context to our conversation?
Yes. So I'll kick it off with this particular date, 15th of August, which is, many will be aware, it's like several days ago. And this particular date in the history of West Papua, it was an agreement that was made between the Dutch and the Indonesian, which was brokered by the U.S., that the administration of West Papua will be transferred from the Dutch to the to Indonesia. And so that was in 1962, 57 years from now. So prior to the 1962, Australia, the U.S., as well as Great Britain, those allies, have already recognized that the decolonization process and programs, basically, in parts of Africa and Asia is very common. And so the UN at the time was having this program to go through those decolonization programs, and a lot of them emerging new states were established. But for West Papua case, there was something that the allies see that they don't want to let go, and that's the resources, the wealth of resources. It's the gold. At the moment, the Freeport-McMoRan, it's one of the largest copper mine, as well as the second largest gold mine operating in the highlands of West Papua, Timika area. And this is where it's there's conflicts happening now. So far, it's 9 months of conflict in Duga since last December, with some confrontation with the Liberation Army and the Indonesian military. But at the same time, that was the resources have really been the key factor to really allow the region entangled in geopolitical strategic importance of Western government. And so that particular agreement led to later a fraud, as well as a whitewash, what they call Act of Free Choice in 1969. And so that Act of Free Choice, it is debatable until now in terms of its legality and the process that was undertaken for the Papuans to determine their future. So up until today, for West Papuans, we believe and we felt that we haven't had the chance to determine our right for the future of the nation. And so that has been the call since Indonesia occupied the territory up until now, is to call for a referendum, but a process where let the West Papua vote and to determine that. And so that has been the big push back in the 60s to the 70s up until now, 21st century. And it's also the question of, in this region where colonialism is still alive in the 21st century. And so that's in a nutshell of our background, a bit to West Papua and the fight for freedom.
Thank you, brother. And for over the years, you just mentioned, there's sort of been different calls for referendum, for different things. And there's been many different groups that have sort of led these calls as well. Like you mentioned, the Liberation Fighters. For our listeners as well, could you sort of let us know about the sort of different groups within West Papua and also outside West Papua that are fighting, for the freedom and the liberation of West Papuans? Because I think this will be a good, chance for our listeners to sort of understand who are on the front lines, whether that's, in West Papua or around the world that are doing work. I think it would be a good thing for our listeners to sort of do their own research as well on who was sort of leading these movements for the next generation as well.
Indeed, and so there is dynamics within the movement inside as well as abroad. So what actually, because of the landmass of the island and many languages that It also means that to communicate, to have that unified and representative voices is very difficult. Back in the days in the 70s, mostly 70s and 80s. So what actually happened was in the highlands and mostly isolated areas is where the Liberation Army, what we call TPNPB, so it's the West Papua National Liberation Army. So they mostly are just the communities who are defending the land, the sacred land, as well as their sacred areas. And so with bow and arrows is what they use for defense. And most that's in the highlands. Going to the coastal, it's more diverse group of fishermen, as well as songmen, custom men, and so they also were. That's where a lot of contact with the outsiders, and so the movement is led through universities, and so over the years there has been various political entity, I'd say, that led the movement. So students have led the movement in pretty much from the 2000 onwards. It's the movement is led by mostly young leaders and young Papuan who are still at university. And up until today, we are seeing that a lot, that the students are driving.
Did they occupy the university just recently as well?
Yes, I'll get to that. Yes, definitely they did. In parts of in West Papua, but also around Indonesia, parts of Indonesia as well. And so the movement was very much in terms of defensive of the land through the Liberation Army, but it also established diplomatic wings. And so it's the OPM. So in the 70s, there's been some proclamation of the statehood of the nation of West Papua. And then because of the very strong infiltration from the state through its intelligence operation, military operation, has really weakened the movement as well. And so undermining basically the movement. So over the years, the movement somewhat adapted to the environment and shifted and its shapes and forms. And so in 2000, after the recognition of the East Timor, the referendum, and then the statehood of East Timor was recognized. There's also this feeling of Papua Papua Spring. And so there was a congress that was called for all the Papuan political leaders, tribal leaders, church leaders to come together so they that have a unified voice. And that was through the formation of the Presidium Council. So it forms a legislative form of governance that interact with the government, but at the same time with the people and the aspirations of the people. After 10 years, just after a year or two, the president of the Presidium Council, Teise Luai, was murdered by the Indonesian special forces called the Kopassus, which they are trained and funded by the U.S. military. And so they just cut the head off, and so it means the movement was weakened. So over the years, that's where the students led the movement, and various student groups in different two campuses, one in Manokwari, one in Jayapura. So there are a few of the student movement, but the agenda and the mission is for full independence. And so over the years, there was another congress, which was the third one, and it established a transitional government. But then in terms of diplomacy, it hasn't really garnered support. And so there was a call from the Pacific government through the sub-regional body, the Melanesian Spearhead Group, felt that there needs to be a more unified and representative voice in diplomatic arena. And so in 2014, that is where all the elements within the movement came together and unified and established the United Liberation Movement for West Papua, or the acronym is ULMWP. So since 2014, ULMWP is now the the spearhead for the people of West Papua as well as the voice. And in West Papua, it's more through the student movement and as well as the KNPB, is the West Papua National Committee, where they organize mass mobilization and rallies and to bring people together. And so it's more of that coordinative approach. So for diplomats, it's the ULMWP carrying the aspirations and the voice of the people, whereas internally in West Papua, KNPB has been a stronghold in bringing people together for mass mobilization, which which they are the topic of student movement. And recently there has been various actions happening in response to racial discrimination and racial slurs that were made by the Indonesian police, military, as well as what they call ORMAS group. It's thugs and rascals, basically, that are being used by the state to stir up some problem and, create unrest in West Papua, but also a lot of students, Papuan students in Surabaya, in Malang, and another town area in Indonesia.
Well, that's where I wanted to go to next as well. What is sort of, the backlash or the sort of the racial discrimination that West Papuans face home in West Papua, but then also in Indonesia as well, because that was one of the main things that I saw before the internet block was, placards of like West Papuan family, people with signs saying, we're not monkeys and, we're not we aren't subhuman and all these things. What is some of the racial threats and violence that, West Papuans get back home and also in Indonesia?
Yeah, so the recent discrimination against the Papuan students, it goes back to the 15th of August, which many of the Papuan activists and through the action committee who organizes a peaceful rally on the 15th of August to remind Indonesia about its broken promise. And so it sparks from there, and also to call on the Pacific Island leaders who were meeting in Tuvalu during that week as well on the issue of West Papua, that the Pacific leaders needs to step up in the language and approach to the human rights situations and the violations that the Papuans are facing. And so it's all kind of like falling timely. And so on the 15th, when the action happened in West Papua, 141 activists in Jayapura were arrested. And in Malang, another town in Java Island, Papuan students who came out to also did a similar action, they were verbally and physically abused by these thugs. And what transpired from there is that the thugs used that opportunity to start racially abuse them, like with words such as, "Oh, you guys are monkey." And so monkeys have to go back to Papua. So literally. And that evening on the 15th, the town mayor of Malang, it was quoted in the media that he felt that the unrest in that town makes him very frustrated. And he calls on repatriating all the Papuan students from Malang and send them back to West Papua. Now, another incident happened on the next day. So the abuse and arrest was made in Malang, but as well as Ternate, Ambon, and there was a few other places that actions were happening in support of the Pacific Island Forum leaders to call look into West Papua human rights situation, as well as the 15th of August on West Papua's calendar about the New York Agreement. And what transpired from that, it's also 2 days before the Indonesian Independence Day. And so it was an opportunity that was exploited by the thugs that they are backed by the police and military, which they went into one of the, in front of a Papuan student dormitory in Surabaya, and they remove up, and at the moment, no one has been identified who literally removed the Indonesian flag in front of the Papuan dormitory and throw it into the sewer. And so up until now, we don't know. But what actually transpired from that incident was that the Papuan students were blamed for pulling down that red and white flag and throwing it down the drain. And so the thugs gathered in front of the Papuan student dormitory, which was backed by the police and the military. And for four intensive hours, they were racially abused and called to be go back to Papua. And words such as monkeys were used repeatedly. And up until it was 4 or 5 in the afternoon, and the police just break through the fence and broke through the windows as if they're going into a war. And so they detained and arrested 43 Papuan students inside and took them straight to police station. And that sparked anger and from Papuans around other parts of Indonesia, but also in West Papua, when footage was shown where there was this chant that was called Usir Papua, means remove Papua from here and send them back. Remove the monkeys from here. So that really generated anger and frustration. So on the 19th, that's when a lot of Papuans throughout West Papua came out to the street of the towns. In Manokwari was very confrontational, whereby the police and the protesters came and they protested. There was tires bent and a government building was bent down. In Jayapura, they sit in front of the governor's office for the whole day. And then it just kind of spontaneously since then up until as of yesterday, I'm aware, there was actions happening around. So it's been happening spontaneously. And there were some cases of police coming in and trying to stop those rallies. So the situation is very conducive. And after the Manokwari incident on the 19th, the Indonesian state has sent in navies and military and more reinforcement to the parts where the areas where there has been some confrontation between the police and the protesters.
Just really quickly, brother, for our listeners, if you're just tuning into the program, my guest this morning is Ronnie Karini, proud West Papuan brother based here in Australia now. I just want to head to a quick song break and then come back after that. I just wanted to pretty much get into what's been happening now. You said it's more spontaneous. Some of the actions that are being carried out in West Papua and in Indonesia at the moment. Also, just for our listeners, if you are in Brisbane and you are interested to hear more of what's going on and show solidarity and support the struggle of West Papua, at 12 o'clock today, there is a rally in solidarity with West Papua. It's in Eagle Street here in Brisbane, and it's just to show solidarity and support to the West Papuan community in Australia, but then also to West Papuans in Indonesia and also West Papua. So that's at 12 o'clock, Eagle Street, Riverside Centre, 123 Eagle Street, and it's out the front of, the Indonesian consulate here in Brisbane. So that's happening today at 12 o'clock. I'll try and get down there myself to show solidarity as well. And I think tomorrow there's one on in Perth as well. So there'll be different ones happening in different parts of the country. So please show solidarity. by attending these rallies or by, you know, just Googling and actually trying to research the true history of West Papua and what's actually happening at the moment. Get on your social media, you know, share these articles, you know, look up some of the stuff that Ronnie is talking about. I'm just going to head to a song break and then we'll be back. You're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM. Stomping Ground by Warumpi Band here on Let's Talk. I'm your host, Bo Spearum, and still joining me on the program is Brother Ronnie. I believe you're up in Northern Territory at the moment, brother?
Yes, I'm up here, and it's beautiful out here in the country.
Mm-hmm. Okay, before we get back into what's been happening at the moment, how big is the West Papuan community here in Australia?
The West Papuan community would comprise at least up to less than 200 members, and it's spread across Australia.
When when, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. When you came here, did you have to seek asylum? Was that is that the process, when you leave West Papua or Indonesia? Is that the sort of the process?
So there are different people, like Papuans, came here. Some came as asylum seekers, and I came as a student, but then I transitioned, and given my role in advocacy has made it a few of us. So we have to apply and seek protection here. So that was my case. So over the last few years, that's where I applied for protection here. And so then after that, transitioned into permanent residency and citizenship.
I remember a few years ago when we caught up, and maybe we won't mention the brothers' names, but I believe there were some brothers, some West Papua mob that were sharing stories of how they got here on a traditional canoe. Could you tell us that story?
Yes. So in 2006, there were 43 West Papuans who came with a Melanesian outrigger canoe. And they circumnavigate from the northern part of the island of New Guinea all around to the west, and then came down to the south to Merauke, which is already close to Torres Strait Islands. And they believed that it was going to be an 8 hours journey just across the waters. What surprised them is that it took them 3 days, 4 nights out in the open sea with the bad weather. And they thought they're lost and they won't reach the mainland Australia. But to their surprise, that bad weather took them straight to the Cape York, Waipa. And they landed right there, and it was not detected by the border patrol. And it was also after the Tampa crisis, whereby the children thrown overboard, and John Howard was making a big fuss of it during the election. And so there were not a lot of boats coming in. But then the arrival of the 43 West Papuan asylum seekers in early January of 2006 sparked this whole new policies as well of excising mainland. And so, and then that is when, a lot of new policies came up. But the message that those Papuans came, and a lot of them based here, like in Australia, but in Melbourne and Cairns, and came to with the message of save indigenous West Papuans from genocide, or slow motion genocide and human rights abuses. And the Australian government at the time cannot ignore. And it was the fact that that's what's been happening. And so it sparks a bit of diplomatic tension between Canberra and Jakarta for at least 6 months, by which Indonesia recalled their diplomat back to Jakarta until there's an agreement between both countries, and which during the Kevin Rudd government, Lombok Treaty was decided between the two governments, and so, but until now, Australia, part of that agreement is Australia respects Indonesia's sovereignty, and one of the clause, it's clause 2.3 in that Lombok Treaty, is that they will not any campaign or Papuans will not use the, like the here in Australia, living here, should not use the opportunity to live here to grandstand or to advocate on independence issues. But it was a very open, the language was very much not like it's open ended, and so open for independent for various interpretation. So for Indonesia, it means that Australia should not allow any campaign groups do a shout out for West Papua or do protest here in Australia. But for Australia, it's a different interpretation. So yeah, it was the journey of those 43 West Papuan asylum seekers.
Thank you for that, brother. Well, I guess we'll get back into what we were talking about before, just before the song break. We were yarning about the demonstrations and the uprising from the many West Papuan people in West Papua and also throughout Indonesia as well, in various different cities. You were mentioning it sort of, it was spontaneous. More and more people sort of gravitated to these mass mobilizations. After the eviction of some West Papuan mob from the university, and then also these racist slogans, referring to West Papuans as subhumans and also as monkeys, which sort of sparked massive nationwide protest as well. So yeah, we would love to sort of get back to that as well. Is what's happening today, or over the last few days, or has it slowed down?
Yeah, so since the 19th of August, with all these spontaneous actions happening throughout Indonesia and everywhere around West Papua with mass numbers, and that has really sent a different message to Jakarta, especially to President Jokowi. And now, because the first response from Indonesia is they send the military and the police and navy already now on the ground, and then after that, the president called for patience and forgiveness. And that's a very, very poor language to use in this conducive situation. And so the governors, the provincial governor in Papua province, have called him out on being ignorant of the fact that the situation and the reality on the ground is totally far different from what he's trying to call upon people to be patient and to forgive. And so at the moment, after those mass actions, the state has, through the Ministry of Communication, they have slowed down the internet access. And so that this has sparked another frustration and anger throughout West Papua, that because of live Facebook, of footages and images being uploaded, so people around the world are seeing what is exactly happening with military cracking down on peaceful protests. So the internet access is now very, very, very slow all throughout West Papua. So, for example, in Sorong, since the 19th of August, the people have set and occupied the government building for 3 days, and no one has really gained access after that. And on the second day, the police used tear gas for 3 straight hours to disperse, like forcefully disperse the crowd for 3 hours. But that didn't stop the people to come back again the next morning to occupy the government space. So lessons were learned from these instances in Sorong, and as well as in the other area in Fakfak. And Fakfak is where the indigenous Papuans, the population, they have been marginalized by the transmigrants, the Muslim transmigrants. So Fakfak has been another case of the transmigrants, or what is now labeled as pro-Indonesia versus pro-Merdeka. And so there has been a confrontation through that. So there was a death, and someone was bayoneted through his stomach and intestines comes out, and he died, an indigenous man, young man. And now this has kind of like escalated to this eye for an eye. But for us, we've communicated and making sure that we maintain a peaceful approach to all these actions. But now we're seeing a scenario of this kind of like militia backed by the police and military groups emerging and kind of like coming out with red and white flag and trying to stir up the situation. So that's in Fakfak. And other places, people are still coming out and marching In Timica. Timica is where the Freeport-McMoRan mining is. And that's also another area where not many of the indigenous, like there's a lot of the police, the security forces around that area. So when the indigenous Papuans came out to do an action, all of them got arrested. And so in terms of really the space for them to have the freedom to express their views and concerns of what's really happening is very much closing down on them. And so there has been some conversations around with our activist friends inside over the last few days in looking back at this. It's not slowed down. The momentum is still there. And so we wanted to use this momentum to really coordinate for another round of action. So there is conversation. So in the coming days, there'll be a coordinated action that will be happening throughout West Papua. So yeah, keep an eye out on that one. And we are aiming for a mass mobilization by students and those who are working within the government, but as well as any Papuans inside to come out. And this time we are calling to return the red and white flag to Indonesia government and to the president of Indonesia. And we are not going to accept that flag until there is a response from the UN, given in line with the outcome of the Pacific Island Forum, which they're calling on the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet is her name, to visit. And so we're going to use this to call upon a UN visit and to see the situation on the ground. So there, we're expecting actions coming up in the next few days, but more of a coordinated effort on actions around Papua and West Papua.
Deadly to hear that, MIMOB is still continuing to, carry out actions and hit the streets in the face of, brutality and what, I guess, a lot of West Papuans know is a result of them standing up, sadly. I guess, we're sort of coming to the back end of the program, so I've got a few more questions. You see this online all the time, like photos, they get posted quite a bit. If West Papuans fly the flag, is it really if West Papua mob fly the flag, is it sort of seen as an act of treason, or are they punished for flying the flag, or is that just sort of just like I don't know what you call it, internet sort of talk as well? Like, is there really bad repercussions from flying the Morning Star flag?
There is a repercussion for flying the Morning Star flag. It's part of the special autonomy law that was introduced to Papua and West Papua in 2000. And so many of the political activists have been charged under this treason charge under the special autonomy law. So I have to also mention on the 15th of August, the key organizer of the rally. He's also the head of the political bureau of ULMWP. He was arrested and now he's been put in isolation, and friends and families cannot visit him to bring food or even clothing for him to change. And at the moment they haven't charged him, but he is likely to be facing treason charge for organizing rally on the 15th of August.
How long will he get?
Usually what's happening is the state will leave him in custody for at least 6 to 9 months without charge, just to really torture him, basically psychologically torture him, physically torture him, and then until he has to admit to the state of the crimes. The crime is just for organizing a peaceful rally and to represent that Morning Star flag. And that's basically that. and then he will be charged. And so that's a classic example of this treason charges being implemented through the special autonomy law. And so many are faced with that. Over the last few years as well, for organizing their support through the ULMWP and petition. So, yeah, it is still there and it exists. And so that has really, you know, it's there, but it doesn't weaken the voice or the, you know, the motivation from many of the Papuan.
Of course. Mm. And I guess lastly, because I want to play a song of yours, or you know, not of, but like, you know, I want to play a song to take us out of the program. But before that as well, you're involved in making music. You are a musician. You travel around the country to different festivals, you know, playing your music, and also representing the struggle for West Papua as well. Could you tell us a bit about this song that we will play at the end of the program?
Yes, so it's Sorong Samarai. So Sorong, it's the town, or it's the town to the western tip of the island of New Guinea, and Samarai is to the eastern side of Papua New Guinea. So we frame this two words, Sorong Samarai, to really sense a message that the people are one, though the language are diverse, but it culturally, ethnically, we are one. We share the same land, we share the same ocean, and we are one in the struggle. So it's through that messaging that we would push through music. And so there's a campaign we call Rise of the Morning Star. And Rise of the Morning Star engages more with arts and cultural spaces, musicians, filmmakers, and basically anyone within the entertainment industry to be the voice and carry on the advocacy through music and the art space. And so just over the weekend, we are here in Darwin as part of the Darwin Festival, and we work with the communities in Darwin here through what is called the Drumming Up the Storm. And so Drumming Up the Storm brings in 40 different drummers, children as young as 5 and as old as mid-60s, elders from Papua New Guinea as well as from Darwin. Come together and make a tree that mahogany tree that was fall down through the Marcus cyclone that hit Darwin last 2017. So we make drum out of it, and so that was over the weekend. We play the Drumming Up the Storm. And people can check it out on Rise of the Morning Star Facebook page. And yesterday, we played in the closing of the Darwin Festival with Sorong Samarai, and basically just to send a positive message of resilience and how the power of music can become the weapon to touch the hearts and minds of people who probably are not aware of the issue, but just using music to really preach to their hearts and minds. And share the word and share the love of what we do in terms of with culture, but also the resilience of people back in West Papua continuing to pursue the aspirations in the face of tyranny. So this song that we'll be listening is Sorong Samarai, and the words will be in English so people can hear. It's a chanting for Papua Merdeka.
And what does Merdeka mean?
Freedom,
yes, and that's what, you know, West Papuan communities in Australia, around the world, and particularly in West Papua and also in Indonesia are calling for. So I'll go in about 40 seconds in, because there's a few photos before the music kicks in. And you're listening to Let's Talk here on 98.9 FM.
again. Bird of paradise never die in vain. Melanesia, you may rise up again. For all who live in darkness can see the great lights afar. Dawn of a new day come with the rise of the morning star. Seagull calling like in a young dream. Claim the land and see we're so wrong. Samurai, one people, one soul, one destiny.
So wrong, samurai, one people, one soul, one destiny. So wrong, samurai,
we got to keep on pushing forward.
So wrong, samurai, one people, one soul, one destiny. So wrong. Come back again, like in this house boomerang.